Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, let's go back 25 years and a speech by Taoiseach Bertie Ahern apologising on behalf of the Irish people to those who'd spent their childhoods in residential institutions run by 18 religious orders.
On behalf of the state and all the citizens of the state, the government wishes to make a sincere and long overdue apology to the victims of childhood abuse for a collective failure to intervene, to detect their pain and to come to the rescue.
And that was Bertie Ahern. As I say, the apology came before the broadcast of the final episode of States of Fear on RTE television. And the landmark documentary series detailed the abuse of children in these institutions. It also caused a seismic shift in Ireland, and it has had lasting implications. So here to explore the legacy of that series is Diarmaid Ferriter, Professor of Modern History at UCD. Good morning, Diarmaid.
Morning, Colm.
Mary Raftery, after whom there's an investigative journalism award named, was central to these developments. So tell us about her. Who was she, first of all?
Mary was a remarkably steely, courageous investigative journalist. And she might have taken a very different path. She was a Dubliner and studied in UCD in the 1970s. She actually went to study engineering. And she found herself drawn into student activism and journalism. And she actually abandoned the engineering to pursue journalism. She was also a brilliant musician, a very talented cellist, very humane, and a great campaigner for social justice. And she found herself drawn into interesting questions in the 1980s about church-run institutions and about how power had operated in Ireland for so long. And it brought her into places like In Dublin and then McGill magazine. And then she found a job in RTE on Today Tonight, this before prime time. And she began asking searching questions. The title of a book of her collected columns is Do They Think We're Idiots? And it's a reminder that she would never accept lazy or evasive answers. And she was pursuing accountability in relation to how these network of institutions, this large network of institutions in Ireland, had come into being and the impact that it had on people. And she was hugely assisted by Sheila Ahern, her fellow researcher. And they started with a basic question. How did so many Irish children end up in institutions?
Which is a pretty key question to the whole thing.
It was
because
massive.
Ireland incarcerated more people, I think, than a lot of other countries.
Yeah, and when you look at, I mean, there were 37,000 children went into industrial schools and reformatories between 1936 and 1970. And a lot of the focus was on that particular group. But the question was, how do you go about answering that particular searching question that she asked? And that involved building relationships, obviously, with those who had been in the institutions. The power of states of fear rested with the dignity that was afforded to these particular individuals and the airing of their experiences. And of course, Mary had to establish a particular relationship with them and afforded dignity to them, whilst also asking these very difficult questions about power and the nature of these institutions and how they were run and how they were funded. And she also had to deal then with the legal concerns of RTE management, because they would have been very anxious, obviously, about a lot of the content. And she was adamant that these programmes had to go out at a prime time slot to give them the weight that they deserved. So there were tricky issues around that. It wasn't easy for Mary, but they were broadcast in April and May 25 years ago. And isn't it interesting that that apology came, as you said, before the broadcast of the last programme? Such was the cumulative effect. They had really had a massive impact, and they really helped to reshape the discourse about these difficult questions.
A lot of people who would have been affected by institutional abuse would have gone abroad. Other people may have been in addiction. They would have been quite vulnerable people whose voices were first heard. The temptation would have been there to ignore them. So how did she amplify that? And what other source material to corroborate their testimony did she have access to in order to harden this up?
What they were doing was investigating the different departments who would have been responsible for running these institutions. And of course, that spread across the Department of Education and the Department of Justice and the Department of Health. So there would have been certain documentation available. But it was then about travelling the country and getting in the region of 100 people, 100 former inmates of these institutions to speak on camera about their experiences. That was the power of it. It vindicated them, it vindicated their experiences, and it was really about airing that. So it was a combination of that direct personal testimony.
Who would have been the standout voices in that?
Oh, there were so many. I mean, like one that springs to mind in particular, just called Barney. And it was the casualness of the abuse and the way he spoke about how he had been treated and just the daily infliction of horrors and the way it became a part of their life and how humiliating it was. They're the kind of voices that you're talking about. And, you know, when you consider what's involved in trying to bring these experiences to screen, these were harrowing testimonies. This is really, really difficult subject matter. And there had been debate, of course, prior to this, and there had been a few documentaries prior to this, but there tended to be a lot of focus on how the institutions of state had operated, how did the religious orders operate. The power of this lay in the voices of these people themselves. And the question then, of course, was how would this impact on public debate about this in Ireland? You know, Bertie Ahern referred there to our collective shame, this idea that we need to take communal ownership of this, the failure to intervene, the failure to rescue these people. How do you then start to try and give meaning to that in terms of probing in a much deeper way?
Was he right to frame it like that, do you think? Because, I mean, courts sent people to these institutions.
Well, this is the fascinating thing.
The National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children recommended these people to be sent out to the courts.
Like, it brings you all the way back to the Children Act at the beginning of the 20th century. And there were those who were saying that because this act was about bringing parents to account for neglect of their children.
Poverty, effectively.
That the 20th century would be the century of the child, that the children's rights would be vindicated. But ultimately, it was a parent-centred focus. It was bringing them to account for their neglect. But the children ended up being sent by the courts to these institutions, supposedly in their best interest, the state acting in loco parentis, the religious orders running these institutions and being funded by the state. And it was about that system as it had operated. And there had been questions raised in a very limited way in previous decades. Occasionally, the lid had been lifted.
In what format?
Well,
was
I'll
it
give
personal
you an example.
Memoirs? Or?
But in 1954, as far back as that, the Minister for Education, Sean Moylan, had to address this issue in the Dáil in April 1954 because Pádraig Cowan, who was a Dublin TD, had been approached by the mother of an inmate of Artane Industrial School who had been hospitalised after being viciously beaten by a 21-year-old Christian brother. And she wasn't allowed to visit him in hospital. And she asked Pádraig Cowan, as a local TD, to raise it in the Dáil. And Sean Moylan, as Minister for Education, because he had responsibility for these institutions, he said, "I cannot conceive of any sadism emanating from men who are trained to have great devotion to a very high purpose. I cannot conceive of the ill treatment of children by a congregation motivated by the ideals of its founder." And he referred to Artane as a family. And like all families, it's very difficult to regulate this particular family. Some of these boys are very difficult. Sometimes punishment has to be inflicted. It was a very rare public intervention on the official record about some of these issues. And then you had the Kennedy Committee, Justice Eileen Kennedy, who chaired this committee appointed by Donal O'Malley, the Minister for Education, in 1967, to look into this model of institutionalisation. And their report, the Kennedy report, was quite damning as well. What Donal O'Malley had said was, "I want the skin pulled off this pudding." And they did pull off the skin, but they also faced resistance from the Department of Education and Justice because they felt that to highlight some of the conditions in places like Dangan, a notorious reformatory school, for example, where there were naked beatings and humiliations, that it would cause grave public scandal. And the Kennedy Committee made a number of recommendations. So there were, you know, there were certain questions that had been asked, but this was on a different scale.
So was the impact of the documentary then in the 1990s coming, unfortunately, in the right decade, the way perhaps had been prepared throughout the early 90s for the public to be more receptive that the institutions that had once been revered had feet of clay?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is where this phrase, "don't ask, don't tell," came under much more critical scrutiny. Who knew what? John Bamble wrote a very well-known piece in 2009 after the publication of the Ryan Report, in which he said in the New York Times, "everyone knew, but no one said anything." You know, it was this idea that this wasn't just about church and state, it was also about society turning a blind eye, and that there was almost an unwritten contract in place, that people knew that there were these institutions all over the country, these kids behind high walls, but there was no intervention. So what ultimately the momentum created by the States of Fear documentaries did lead to the Commission to Inquire into Child Abuse, which of course took 10 years under two chairs to produce its monumental report in 2009. That was directly as a result of the work of Mary Raftery. And that was monumental because it was five volumes over 2,500 pages, 216 institutions, 18 religious congregations, 1,700 witnesses. It was described on publication by the Irish Times as the map of an Irish hell, that it was exposing the contours of a dark hinterland of the state. And that was a good summation of it.
How open were the various orders who'd run the institutions to allowing unfettered access to the archives, or was that ever allowed?
They weren't. I mean, there's never been unfettered archives or unfettered access to these archives, because these are private institutions. And of course, you could argue, as archivists, including Katrina Crowe, have very convincingly, that these should be considered public records, given the connections that we're talking about. But they are private institutions, and they were entitled, of course, to refuse access. Sometimes then, as a result of these investigations, they were compelled to give access to some of the records that they hold. But this was never satisfactorily resolved. And some of the problems, I suppose, over the years with these various investigations is that they haven't had complete access to all the documentation that they would like. But the extent of the Ryan Commission's probings meant that they did have a huge amount of material. And that's also a difficulty, in the sense that most people are not going to read the Ryan report, given the sheer scale of it. So an awful lot of people, including those who make pronouncements about it sometimes, haven't necessarily engaged with the full contents, but it can be very difficult, obviously, to read something on that scale.
Now, States of Fear told the stories of the institutions through the eyes of people who'd experienced them, and as well as you say, looking at other evidence as well. But after States of Fear, there were other investigative programmes came along as well, which opened people's eyes further.
Yeah, and even Mary Raftery, of course, was involved in the Cardinal Secrets programme that led to the investigation into what had happened in the Dublin Diocese between the 1970s and the 1990s in relation to investigating those reports. But you also had powerful responses in 2009 by those who had been affected. Michael O'Brien, for example, made a very emotional intervention on the Questions and Answers Current Affairs programme in 2009, in which he spoke about his experiences in Ferry House in Tipperary. He had been in that industrial school, and he was one of 13 children. And mother died very young, and the children were split up, sent off to these various
institutions. Which wasn't uncommon. If a mother died, the father was rarely left in custody of his own children.
Absolutely. And he was taken off by the so-called cruelty men. The family split up. And he met his wife at 18, and he was never able to tell her until 1999 because of States of Fear. And then he spoke about the impact of the report of the Ryan Commission. And he, giving evidence to the Ryan Commission, led to a suicide attempt. So you're talking about renewed trauma. And he was unusual. Michael was unusual as a victim in that he was an elected Fianna Fáil politician. He had served as mayor of Clonmel. But it was the power of the way he spoke about families that had been ruptured. And the reverberations down through the decades.
And his again, own experience of flashbacks of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah. And I mean, that was the case as well when it came to how people coped with having to speak about what had happened to them, even when they are afforded this opportunity that they have long desired, what that actually involves in relation to their reliving of these traumatic experiences. And then you had the whole question of, well, is there going to be redress for this? Is there going to be compensation? And of course, the path after States of Fear, and indeed after the Ryan Commission report, it was never straightforward. You know, in the intervening period between those two developments, you had this redress board, you had a row then over whether the Catholic Church was offering adequate sums of money, taking enough responsibility, and of course a deal between the government and the religious orders that they would provide 128 million euro, which, as Mary Raftery described it, was abysmal. And the overall estimate ultimately was about 1.5 billion when it came to redress. And there were complications around gagging clauses.
Which I only heard Catherine Connolly, the independent TD for Galway West, speaking about that in the Dáil. She had acted as a barrister at the Commission for People and the ongoing traumatic impact of that gagging order on people who'd appeared before the Commission.
Yeah, you see, the work is never done because you have the exposure or because you have these broadcasts or you have these commissions of investigation. It's the fallout afterwards and how the legal process might work or how church and state might communicate with each other in relation to shared responsibility. That was never satisfactorily involved. And Bertie Ahern would have made the point at the time in defending that deal that we didn't want to go down the legal route. Michael McDowell, when he was Attorney General, complained that he had not been adequately consulted at a time of that deal being made. So there were all of these reverberations and complications that did lead to a lot of unanswered questions. And some of these issues have still not been resolved.
There was a dull debate on a related issue last week. But the commission itself, the Commission on to Inquire into Child Abuse, it wasn't a straight path from beginning to end, was it?
No, it never is. And we have to remember, what were the terms of reference for that commission? They weren't necessarily answering the question of how this system took root in the first place. They were there to try and investigate what had happened in the institutions, but also to make recommendations in relation to the alleviation of the suffering of those who had been in those institutions. And as sociologists would point out, including Ono Sullivan, who was very involved in working with Mary Raftery on the book that came out of States of Fear, when you have a body like that is acting as both an investigative body and a therapeutic body, the methodology can be very complicated, trying to strike the right balance in relation to those two particular functions. And then, of course, there are questions that you are not addressing because they're not part of your terms of reference. And you also have this question of whether abusers should have been publicly named, and there were legal challenges in relation to that because the Commission, it seemed, did want to name these abusers but was prevented from doing so. So again, you have to consider all of the limitations that are put on those who are charged with these investigations as well.
Very briefly then, what was the reaction to the Commission's final report, which appeared in 2009, a decade and more after States of Fear came out?
The word that was used most frequently was shame, that this was a shameful reminder of the way in which Irish society was operating, especially in relation to the status of children. In many respects, the greatest blot on the copybook of 20th century Ireland.
Is that a useful word to use in an Irish context? Because the temptation culturally has been to hide shame. That's part of the problem in the beginning.
Yeah, but what this did was it exposed that shame, and it was a necessary corrective to the stigma around shame and poverty in particular, because ultimately what bound nearly all of the cases that were covered in States of Fear and the Ryan Commission was poverty.
All right, Diarmaid Ferriter, Professor Diarmaid Ferriter, Professor of Modern History at UCD, thanks very much for joining us. And we should say, if you've been affected by anything we've just been discussing, which obviously had a severe impact on those affected, you can find more information about helplines by visiting rte.ie/helplines. Now, before we go, a 26-year-old man has been jailed for life for murdering his two sisters and brother at their home in Talla in Dublin nearly 2 years ago. Gardaí are continuing to question three people arrested in connection with the murder of a 20-year-old man in Drimna in Dublin yesterday. And the Minister for Agriculture, Charlie McConlogue, has told this programme that in relation to asylum seekers, the focus is on sourcing state land where tented accommodation can be provided on the use of state-owned buildings. That's our lot for today. Thanks for listening. You can catch up on anything you might have missed on this morning's show on the RTE Radio app. Today's programme was produced by Barbara Feeney. Research was by A.B. Philbin-Bowman. The broadcast coordinator was Jane Byrne. On sound was Mark McGrath. And now it's over to Louise Duffy.